From New Hampshire Public Radio, this is Word of Mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott.
Good morning, Los Santos.
Those are sounds from Rockstar Games' Grand Theft Auto V, released last week to rave reviews and record sales. The video game sold more than 13 million copies in its first 24 hours and became the fastest entertainment product to reach $1 billion in sales in just 3 days. Rockstar Games' satirical crime series has regularly topped sales charts, but has just as often been presented as Exhibit A in the debate over whether violent video games incite violence in players. Grand Theft Auto III, the first mainstream success in the series, was cited for inspiring copycat violence in the early 2000s. A decade later, the franchise is more popular than ever. With us for more on how Grand Theft Auto became a household name and its influence on the industry is Dr. Jeremy Saucier, Assistant Director of the International Center for the History of Electronic Games. Jeremy Saucier, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Also with us is Jamin Warren, a returning guest, founder of video game arts and culture company Killscreen. Hello, Jamin.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm well, thanks, but I'm going to start with you. Give us a little bit of the buzz around the new Grand Theft Auto. I am told it is the most expensive video game ever made.
It's certainly one of the most expensive. Take-Two, the publisher, spent close to $200 million between development and marketing. So the last Grand Theft Auto cost about $100 million. So, it's definitely one of the more expensive games out there. Although compared to, say, like a John Carter, which Disney spent $300 million on, I guess they have some catching up to do.
Jeremy, let's go to the first Grand Theft Auto. Give us a little bit of context here. It came out in 1997. What were those earlier versions like? And what eventually led Grand Theft Auto to becoming a household name?
Yeah, those earlier versions were among the first games to allow players to roam around in a pretty open world and to do it as a criminal. So you could jack cars, you're shooting at police officers, and you're running over people. So, of course, this is controversial. You know, most games before this asked players to be heroes, or at least if they asked them to act like criminals, it was for good reason. You know, they were forced to break the law to right some wrong. And in Grand Theft Auto, you're really a small-time criminal who's trying to move up in a world of gangsters. So those early games kind of built the reputation for being kind of cop-killing games and criminal games, but they were largely underground successes. What makes them really household names is that the games get linked to very specific acts of violence. There's a shooting on Interstate 40 in Tennessee by these two stepbrothers. They kill one person and wound another, and afterwards, you know, one of them claims that they were inspired by playing Grand Theft Auto. There's another shooting where an 18-year-old man shoots and kills several police officers, and it's linked to him having played Grand Theft Auto. So all of this kind of, you know, it adds fuel to the fire for critics, people like this lawyer Jack Thompson, psychologist David Walsh, and Senator Joe Lieberman. These are people who are major critics of games. So these kinds of things allowed them to attack Grand Theft Auto specifically and video games more generally and help to make Grand Theft Auto a household name.
We think about the concurrence of crime in our culture. In 99, there was Columbine. But we also see this kind of bent in popular culture toward the anti-hero. I'm thinking of The Sopranos. You know, now we have Breaking Bad. You know, this kind of anti-hero is so popular in our culture. But I'm curious about what was so objectionable about the content, especially in Grand Theft Auto III. What was pointed to as the kind of things that could push an unstable individual, for example, over the edge?
Well, I mean, I think it's always a matter of context. And I think one of the big problems with video games is that it's still a very young medium. You know, you think back to the early days of film when people would see, you know, a locomotive coming towards the screen and they would sort of duck as if it was going to come out and run them over. That demonstrated sort of an early lack of awareness about how the medium functions. And I think what happened with games is that they grew up so quickly and they became commercially viable so quickly that outstripped our cultural literacy of what games are, how they function, and what meaning looks like in those titles. And so, I think that, you know, it's the control aspect that people could point to specific things that you could do in the the Grand Theft Auto games, you know, like run over women or run over pedestrians, but not understanding the context in which those actions exist, either narratively or mechanically. So I think that's a big problem. I mean, at the end of the day, it's important to remember that these are games for adults, absolutely 100% for adults. And so a lot of times when we talk about these games, because we associate games as being a children's activity, we have a very, very difficult time thinking of adults consuming adult content in an adult way. All we think of is, you know, adults consuming children's content or children consuming children's content in an adult way.
Jeremy, I'd love you to pick up on that. Jamin said video games are still in their early stages, but look at the advances that have been made in just 10 years in the sort of technology and the realism of the video games. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think with Grand Theft Auto 3 in particular, you're moving from the earlier games. The graphics were a little bit more primitive. In Grand Theft Auto, you're able to do all the things that Jamin's talking about, but it was you were more immersed in that world. They were street level views. It was the first three-dimensional version of Grand Theft Auto. And so when you're talking about carrying out criminal acts and beating prostitutes and cars bouncing up and down, kind of alluding to explicit acts, you're sort of immersed in that world. You're at a street level view and not watching it from above. And so, again, I mean, those sorts of things are pushing boundaries and taboos, again, particularly when you're associating video games with children. It's one of these things that we see this pattern over and over again. You know, we go back to the late 19th century, you had reformers who attacked, you know, dime novels for corrupting youth. You know, there are bans on pinball. You know, you have attacks on comic books and rock and roll during the 50s and Dungeons and Dragons in the 80s. So, I mean, it's all the things that Jamin's saying, and it's part of this larger historical pattern.
Jamin, I'd love you to pick up on that. You were talking about the difference between adults and children. Adults can read an explicit sexual or violent novel and not be tempted to go out and commit an act of violence. In fact, we read a review in Killscreen that compared the game to the work of Joan Didion. What do you think of that comparison?
Well, I think it's I think one of the things that Didion did incredibly well is with, you know, she was a reporter. I mean, she understood people's motivations and she told her story incredibly well. And I think that's one of the aspirational, you know, desires that we have for games like Grand Theft Auto, is that they could open up these pathways to deeper understandings of human nature. You know, whether or not Grand Theft Auto 5 or any of the Grand Theft Autos, sort of succeed by that count, obviously is up for personal opinion. You know, we're sort of the belief that games can have this transcendent quality. I suspect that Joan Didion herself would probably not agree with our assessment.
I'm guessing not. As a woman writer, I don't think she would likely condone I think you make points on Grand Theft Auto, don't you, for beating up women at a brothel without getting bounced out or something? I'm trying to remember.
I mean, I think the important thing that's important to remember is that there are many things that you can do in Grand Theft Auto. Some of them, I think, are distasteful. Well, I guess a lot of them are at some level distasteful. But I don't necessarily think that the violence in Grand Theft Auto against women, obviously it's problematic at a very base level, but I think if you were to look at it in the landscape of broader media, it wouldn't necessarily be anomalous.
What is the draw to distastefulness? What is the draw to sort of the subversion of, you know, driving around in this kind of open world of post-industrial Los Angeles and doing bad things? What do you think?
Well, I mean, I think it's the same, you know, the same compulsion that, you know, drives us to read books like Lolita. That was a comparison the New Yorker made to Grand Theft Auto. You know, at some level, we like these characters because they exemplify things that we're not, and it allows us to dabble in a different life, in a different, you know, in a different climate, a totally different situation, and allows us to hopefully understand what motivates those people. What I will say is that one of the games that have not done well is they've done an excellent job, I think, adding violence to the anti-hero equation, but haven't always done a good job in terms of adding stakes. You know, with someone like Walter White, you know, that's a character who, you know, obviously grows into, you know, becoming this criminal mastermind, but you do get a very deep understanding of who he is as a person. And I think games are only now starting to try and make justifications for those acts of violence. And that was something I think that Grand Theft Auto 4 did very well. Grand Theft Auto 5, you know, I just started, so I can't say whether it achieves that count, but that's a place where games can go. So it's certainly in vogue in terms of their outlook at this point in time.
Jeremy, right now the big story around Grand Theft Auto is its astronomical sales projections. Has the reputation of the series had an effect on its success?
Absolutely. you know, if you look at the reputation, particularly games that have a reputation for violence, we see this first back in 1976 with an arcade video game called Death Race, and it's inspired by the 1975 film Death Race 2000, one of Sylvester Stallone's finest moments. But it focuses on running over people with their cars, using their cars as weapons. And the arcade game Death Race was a game where it's a top-down view of you driving cars over little gremlin stick figures. And this was, you know, incredibly controversial at the time, and it put Exidy, which was the company that made this arcade game, on the map. Nobody knew about them before. Probably very few people know about them now, but, you know, it basically ensured that game designers would make other games like this. And so for Grand Theft Auto, the same thing happens. I mean, it ensures that they're going to continue to make these games, and that controversy has essentially become their brand. It's what is expected from all of their games. With the Grand Theft Auto 5, I mean, there are torture scenes now. So, I mean, this is kind of the new frontier. So the question is always going to be, what's the next thing that they're going to be able to do? And, mm-hmm. and people are, you know, are certainly going to be interested in that.
What do you think people are going to think of the Grand Theft Auto series 10 years from now? Is it going to continue to push the boundaries? Is it going to appear somewhat quaint? I'd love to hear from both of you on this.
Well, I think that, you know, people do grow up over time. I mean, I know that the audience for Grand Theft Auto is certainly getting older, and I think that, you know, they have higher expectations around acts of violence in that they can't, if you look at one of Rockstar's earlier games, Manhunt, which again was under the public scrutiny for its acts of violence, didn't have nearly the same level of, you know, say narrative polish to try and give that violence some sort of context. But I do think when you compare like violence, I'm just thinking of, you know, films that I've seen. So a film like Drive, for example, still that I had more shudders from watching that film with Ryan Gosling and some of the violence in that film than I've ever had from playing a video game. So there is still like a cinematic, there is a realism level that, you know, obviously, you know, as long as we're using human beings for films, those acts of violence, I think, will always be more graphic. But, you know, there's a sense in which I think there will always be teenagers, there will always be, you know, young men in their 20s who are looking for things like this. And so I think there will likely always be a demand for it.
Jeremy, wrap it up, please.
Yeah, I think it's likely that the games that we're playing and talking about now won't be very controversial or controversial at all 10 or 15 years from now. You know, I think that the culture tends to catch up with these things, and the success of a Grand Theft Auto has made games like this a bit more mainstream. And I mean, it goes back to, you know, the popularity of these anti-hero characters. And you know, so I think if the franchise continues to push boundaries and ask people to confront new issues, you know, if it can continue to be fresh in that way, then those games may be controversial, but it's hard to say what those issues are going to be.
Dr. Jeremy Saucier, Assistant Director of the International Center for the History of Electronic Games. Thanks for your time today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
And Jamin, thank you to you. Jamin Warren is founder of the video game arts and culture company Killscreen.
Thanks so much.
You can read more about the astronomical sales and some reviews of Grand Theft Auto 5. Go to wordofmouthradio.org.